This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
College and pro weekend takeaways. Up first, Michigan will not make a bowl game. The last time they lost to Illinois was 2009. Rich Rod finished 5-7. The last time they were held to 7 points or fewer, 2014. Brady Hoke, they finished 5-7. John, this team will finish 5-7.
So the five games left. They've got to win two out of three games. It's Michigan State, it's Indiana, and it's Northwestern. I'll take the Northwestern and think that that's a win. But if they play the way that they did on Saturday, they're not beating Michigan State. They're certainly not beating Indiana. So I'm not going to say I agree, but I'm going to say it's not an overreaction.
Overreaction now, but I think the wording here is even more interesting. Will not make a bowl game. Make means you're bowl eligible.
Correct.
I can see a 6-6. I think predicting this game coming this Saturday is crazy. So I have no idea what's going to happen, but I think they could win. I think they can lose too, but 6-6 on the table. But if they're 6-6 and they make themselves bowl ineligible, then is that considered making a bowl game?
What do you mean?
You know what I'm saying? I'm twisting the words around here. They were bowl eligible, but they made themselves, they put a postseason bowl ban on themselves, which I anticipate is potentially coming here.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a different can of worms.
Is that an overreaction?
That's why I said self-imposed before the year.
Exactly. They should have done it.
Speaking of this week, let's just say it. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Michigan State will beat Michigan this Saturday in Ann Arbor. MSU is the better coach team. Look at how both teams came out of the bye week. MSU's balanced on offense. They were sound on defense. They beat Iowa without punting, scored on their final four drives with a couple touchdowns. And I love that combination that's forming with Childs and Marsh. Michigan has no quarterback, no passing game. Back to the drawing board. Now what?
It's on the table. There's certainly on the table. It's something that I'm not, it's not an overreaction. If you can't move the ball, you can't possess the ball. And Michigan State did that against still a really good Iowa defense. It's not an overreaction.
Yeah, how does Michigan come out of the bye that way? 2 weeks to prepare.
Not an overreaction. An absolutely disgraceful performance by Michigan after a bye. I think I was trying to defend Sharon Moore and say, hey, let's let it play out, in John's words.
Yeah.
And for his team to come out and look worse after the bye is really incriminating. I passed something along to Jim last night via text. Sharon Moore has entered next coach to be fired odds. And I think that's a little outrageous, probably for now, but it was 33-1.
Yeah, I just think anytime you're getting compared to Rich Rod and Brady Hoke, you're not exactly where you need to be. That's not good company to be keeping as Michigan's head football coach.
But the key was you have 2 weeks. And the first time that Jack Tuttle goes in there against Washington, three scoring drives in a row. They ultimately lose the game because what? Jack Tuttle turns the ball over, fumbles it, and throws an interception. Then you think, okay, well, there's something to build on throughout the bye week. Defensively, you can work on a lot of things. And defensively, there were some things that I thought they did better. And it wasn't the defense that cost them this game. It was a horrific offense. And I know everybody wants to, you know, get on me about my prediction earlier in the year. I've been wrong before. And Jim, let me tell you, I will be wrong again. But I don't know if I was more wrong than I was thinking that this team could be a decent team. Not just a good team, but at least a decent team.
John, they had a touchdown the first drive out of the half against Washington. Since then, the offense has had 15 drives. Only one score in that time. So 14 of 15 drives are empty, and there have been five turnovers in the 15 drives. It's a mess.
They look like they don't care.
Well, let's start at the top. All right. And I know I'm not going to spend the entire rest of the overreactions talking about this, but who has been their most reliable offensive player?
Mullins.
Kalo Mullins. How come he wasn't on the field to start the game? How come you don't, until that one drive that you're talking about, it was like a, I don't know, it was in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And they start off with four Khalil Mullins runs.
Imagine
two
that.
First downs. And then they go to the play action. And I'm watching it. They stick the ball in Khalil Mullins' belly. Linebackers come up. There's Colston Loveland. Twice in a row!
We mentioned coaching. I think this one will be a quick one. Kirk Cignetti is the National Coach of the Year. Indiana 7-0, winning every game by two or more touchdowns. They put up a 50-burger on Nebraska. Hand him the award.
Well, Nebraska is the first winning team with a winning record that they've played. He is certainly the leader in the clubhouse. I'm not ready to hand that one out. I think it's a little bit early. Let's see what happens through the rest of the season. But if the season were to end right now, clearly Coach of the Year.
Let's let it play out a little bit longer. Overreaction for now. I think I sometimes with these things, let's not disrespect what Dan Lanning and, I hate to say this, even James Franklin are doing right now.
Jalen Milroe is not an NFL quarterback. He just isn't a good enough passer. He's had more interceptions than touchdowns the last 2 weeks. And in the red zone, those interceptions, to me, show the gap between him and an NFL passer.
It's an overreaction. He still has plenty of time. It's not like I don't think he's going to be leaving college football this year to be an NFL quarterback next year. He's got plenty of time to improve and work on his craft, become a better passer. I think right now it's an overreaction.
Not an overreaction. Look, I mean, does he tag on to a NFL roster at some point, you know, and he's a backup or a third stringer? Sure. If you look at the garbage that's in the league right now, that spot's there for him. But as far as being a number one, it's not an overreaction.
So right now you think he's going back to school. He has one more year of eligibility.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, yeah.
Jared Goff is the MVP of the NFL. Goff is on one of the two best teams, and he's playing better than Mahomes. Last three games, a maestro, 87% passing, nearly 900 yards, 7 touchdowns, no picks, 13 yards per attempt. Oh, and he caught a pass, too, for a touchdown. 3 straight games with a passer rating above 140. 4th quarterback in history to do it. The last two won the MVP. Rodgers in 2011, Kurt Warner in 99.
Yeah, I think he is certainly an MVP candidate. And it's, I don't think it's an overreaction.
Who's
at all.
Who's the MVP right now?
Right now, yeah. I agree. I have no problem saying that.
I agree. He deserves it right now. We'll see how the whole thing goes throughout the season. I don't even know who else you could argue right now, reasonably. Who would you?
Yeah, who's number two? The betting odds right now are still Mahomes 1, followed by Allen and Lamar.
I mean, the Mahomes thing is absurd. He is doing what he needs to do, and that's the brilliance of how smart and a franchise quarterback he is. He's not trying to overdo it, but he's not the MVP.
Well,
their defense is the MVP.
Yes, I agree. The defense has really saved the offense quite a bit. He did not look really good yesterday. He also doesn't have much to throw to. He is trying to make chicken salad out of, we know what that line is.
Chicken bleep.
But right now, Jared Goff is performing as the best quarterback on the best team in the NFL.
Two best teams in the league right now are the Lions and the Chiefs, right?
Yep. No question.
Hands down, book it. Both have a tremendous need. It's reckless if they don't address it, in my mind.
Both teams.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Kansas City does leading up to the deadline at receiver, as well as, obviously, we're going to be talking about it for 2 weeks. What does Detroit do to solidify an edge pass rusher?
The Niners' Super Bowl window has closed. Losing record after 7 weeks, Ayuk might be done for the year. Purdy was ugly. When he doesn't have the Avengers, he's average, and the support is crumbling.
It's closed for this year. I don't know that it's closed entirely, because when you have Shanahan as your coach, maybe they can't win it because he has to coach in the second half of games, but without Christian McCaffrey, and I don't know that he's back this year, without Ayuk, Debo Samuel, with, you know, he's missed time and missed a hill, you know, yesterday got the illness. I think it's closed for this year.
Okay, so you're talking about this version of the 49ers. So if we went back to the first Super Bowl team that played the Chiefs, to me that was a different version to a degree. They had, I mean, a lot of roster turnover. So I'm saying right now this version, it's not closed yet.
Mm.
I still think this team is going to find a way to get into the playoffs. And when they do, I believe they're going to be a tough out.
Deshaun Watson will never play again. Looked like an Achilles non-contact injury could mean he is out for a year plus. Should have been benched anyway. Are they really going to go back to him?
How many years does he have left on his deal?
Too many. My point is he would be a benched backup. They'd have to park the money.
Okay, so he's not going to play the rest of this year. And I think they probably milk it to where maybe he's able to come back December of next year. He won't. So now you're looking at, what is it, one more year on his contract? So, he doesn't play for Cleveland ever again.
Well, and how many years has he missed in his career when you really think about it? I mean, he played in 2020, but then didn't in 21, barely in 22, barely in 23, barely in 24. I don't think it's a stretch at all to say he doesn't ever play again.
I don't think it's an overreaction. I'm going to say it's an overreaction because, you're painting yourself into too deep of a corner.
Yeah, ever's an overreaction for now. And other than everything else you guys said, I do think that it is. I mean, look, he's taking his last snap probably in Cleveland, but I'm not ready to go like all in on that.
Aaron Rodgers ruined his legacy by leaving Green Bay. A Super Bowl winner, a four-time MVP, yet the lasting image will be this Jets stint. He'll be remembered as an arrogant DB who the Jets catered to, gave him his way, and he's still failing in the biggest market in an epic way. No excuses. It's your fault.
I think it's an overreaction. I don't think it's going to tarnish his legacy. He's still one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. And people will remember the Jets stint. They'll remember him being a DB, but I think there's a lot of people that thought he was a DB before.
He ruined his legacy at the end of his time in Green Bay by his behavior that's just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. Look, I don't know what this guy's going to do after his career. I have zero interest in seeing him on TV and doing games or anything like that. So I can't stand him. I think he's probably the most disliked person in sports right now, to be quite honest with you.
Well, he'll probably be a co-host with McAfee.
Yeah, McAfee, and go down that road, and he can do that. And I don't know. I think he ruined it long ago.
And those are your weekend overreact gyms. 97.1.
Last year, my wife and I decided we wanted to put a new roof on the house. And now that we're going to sell it, it's a great value added. But the best part about it was the entire process. Rapid Roofing, Mike Beattie, the team came out, professional from start to finish, and they have protected my house. One day, they came out, ripped the roof off, made the repairs, put the new roof on, cleaned everything up, and they were gone. And I mentioned the estimate they gave me. It was great value, and it wasn't a high-pressure sales event. If you want the same value added to your house, you want the same protection for your family and your biggest investment, give Rapid Roofing a call at 888-360-ROOF. That's 888-360-ROOF, or you can find more information on the web at rapidroofing.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
No kidding. Making an all-pro case. Let's get to Red in Detroit. Your thoughts on the Lions. It's 97.1.
Hey, I think that I got two questions too. I think that we all trust in Dan Campbell and Brett Holmes and everything. But I thought something was going to get done last week for that DN. Sam Darnold was rushing. Like, we played good, and I'm thankful for the win. You know, we got a damn near perfect team. Like, I'm so proud of these boys. But we got to address the elephant in the room, you know? And I think that if we are serious about this Super Bowl run, which I truly believe in, we got to make a move. So my first question is what do you think is okay for not to do nothing? You know, like if we did nothing, do y'all think that is okay? And also too, Costa, are you gonna ask Dan Campbell about the recklessness of of that punt? Like, I want y'all to say it. You know, like Dan Campbell was saying.
I'm going to ask him about it. I don't know if I'm going to accuse him of being reckless with that, but I do want to know what was the thought process there, because it didn't make any sense to me. Yeah, absolutely. I plan to ask Dan about it. I mean, I think it's a fair thing. I don't know if he spoke after the game about that call, but yeah, it's something I want to ask him on Tuesday when we have him on. John, in terms of his question about pass rush, like if they do nothing, he said, is that okay?
No, it's not okay. I'm okay with them doing nothing leading up to last week. I don't want them to rush in and possibly overpay. You got to see what the market is going to be. They were able to come away with a win, and I don't think we need pass rush help to beat the Tennessee Titans. I don't think we need one guy to be added to this team to beat the Tennessee Titans. We need the team to play well. But before the trade deadline, and I'm somewhat hopeful before they play Green Bay, that they are able to add, whether it's a Harold Landry, like you talked about, it's an Azeez Ojulari, a guy out of
New York.
The Giants, that might be able to help in a Harold Landry-type role, because he's more of a linebacker-ish. Za'Darius Smith is a guy that I mentioned early on last week, and I still think, I mean, he had a sack yesterday, and I'm curious as to what they're thinking in Cleveland. Because they lost their starting quarterback. They weren't willing to bench him. Yet, now that they are without him, does it make them better?
In a weird way, yes, but the record still is the record.
Yeah, the record still is the record. Does it change their thought on their future? Like, was this a net positive addition by subtraction? So, again, yeah. I don't know, because they sold Amari Cooper. Was that the first of, hey, we're going to sell Za'Darius Smith?
Oh, I think he's available.
Maybe Myles Garrett. I don't know that that's going to happen or be available. I'm also curious as to, you know, Myles Garrett in his thought of the city, and because he had some harsh words for the fans after the game when they were booing the fact that Deshaun Watson got hurt. Now, you could boo for a lot of reasons. I think that was a poor move by the fan base when a guy gets hurt. Whether you like him or not, whether you think he's a good guy or not, like, the dude got hurt. Now, maybe you cheer because you have another quarterback coming in, but I think booing was a bit out of place, and he had some harsh words for the fans after the game.
Yeah, he did. Let's get to Heather in the news. What do you got going on, Heather?
Hey, you guys, good morning. So the Detroit Marathon was marked by love and loss over the weekend. So history was actually made. There was the first husband and wife duo that won their respective races. First time in history of the marathon that has ever happened. But tragedy also struck when a 57-year-old runner collapsed and died right around the fifth mile marker. So during this race, runners crossed the Ambassador Bridge into Canada. They come back through the Detroit Windsor Tunnel. So this man collapsed on the Canadian side. He was rushed to the hospital there, the Windsor Regional Hospital, where he ended up passing away. Very sad. Yeah. The only other fatality in the marathon's history was back in 1994 when a 42-year-old man from Troy passed away from a heart attack. Mm. So very sad. But the happy part, that this husband and wife duo, right? Mm-hmm. The husband finished in 2 hours, 17 minutes, and 47 seconds. His wife, 2 hours, 42 minutes, and 46 seconds. They had this huge embrace at the end of the race, both from Ferndale. Pretty cool to see that as well.
That's cool.
Yeah. So while Aiden Hutchinson is recovering from this broken tibia and fibula, he watched the Lions beat the Vikings from his home, kind of like the rest of us took in the game. He made a post on the Instagram page for his brand, House of Hutch. He posted some pictures from Sunday, you know, with his family, and he captioned the post, "Game day looked a little different today, but counting our blessing and counting another Lions win." And then he also gave an update in a separate post, kind of like how he is doing following the surgery. And he said, you know, he's on the road to recovery, attacking each day. And, of course, everyone wants to know, you know, when are we going to see him back, right? So Dan Campbell has said that his recovery will be about 4 to 6 months. But there are some sources that are saying there's a realistic chance that he could return for the Super Bowl if Detroit does advance that far. There's one source that went as far to say that it would be more surprising if he did not make it back for a potential Super Bowl appearance than if he did.
I saw no ligament or nerve damage too, which I think may be part of the optimism.
Yeah, no nerve damage, no ligament damage was also part of the report. Now, it goes to how valid are these reports and the sources that we're relying on. If there's no ligament damage, it's a clean break. I think there's a if anybody can, like Dan said, if anybody can, I would think Hutch would be a leading candidate. Mm-hmm. But my expectations that he could come in and be a major contributor in the Super Bowl is limited.
Yeah. Pink, she recently performed at Little Caesars Arena, and from what I hear, it was a fantastic show. However, she just had to cancel a bunch of her upcoming concert dates, and really no specific reason. She said on social media, it was due to reasons beyond her control. So she canceled 4 upcoming dates. So her next concert will be scheduled on November 3rd in Austin, Texas. It was a concert I would have loved to have went to. I've never seen her perform, but I hear she always does amazing things. You guys, Halloween, it's upon us, which means it is time to unveil Michigan's most popular Halloween candy. Candy corn is not the most popular, but it
thank
did.
You.
Good.
It used to be, right? Like, it's like, gross. I mean, it's not, I don't know. Of but all the candy, the how is that the most popular, yeah, right? It doesn't make any sense. So this year, Starburst is Michigan's most popular Halloween candy, followed by candy corn and Butterfinger. Now, nationally, M&M's actually dethroned the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup for the top spot, followed by the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup and Sour Patch Kids.
I would take all three of the top ones nationally. I would take two of the top ones, obviously not candy corn, locally. I'm curious, are they, I'm going to ask a question that there's no answer for. Okay. Are they including all versions of M&M's or just the classic original?
Well, all, because that was one of the reasons they said it probably took over that top spot.
That's
is because M&M has so many versions, right? You can get the chocolate,
the peanuts,
you can get
the cookie dough ones are really good if you haven't had them.
I have not tried the cookie, but the creamy peanut butter ones, once you start, you can't stop.
And for Starburst for Michigan, red Starburst, number one Starburst.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I like the pink.
Okay. Red or pink, it doesn't matter.
Either one. Yeah. Those are the top two.
Yeah.
It's Heather with the news. More thoughts on the Lions. It's 97.1.
Hey, talking about candy. I want to start this one by saying it's not the candy, it's Ideal You. And they're going to teach you and coach you what to eat and drink to lose weight. I get asked all the time, why did I decide to go with Ideal You? Why did I decide to lose weight? Well, first one, I was way too fat. I wasn't feeling good about how I looked at pictures. I wasn't feeling good, especially after Teddy was born, and the fact that I wanted to be able to play with my kids, whether it's football with Jack, it's baseball, it's softball, it's basketball, all of those things I wanted to be able to do. And not just now, but I wanted to be able to do them in the future. So I called Ideal You. They set me up with a program and a weight loss coach. You want the same treatment? Go to idealu.us right now. If you want to change your life, it's idealu.us. Schedule your free consultation because you could be 20, 30, or even 40 pounds lighter in just 40 days. They've helped me. They've helped thousands of other people just like you. And you could be one of those thousands. If you want to weigh less, go to idealu.us.
The man they call Sonic. Dan Miller on the call. Gibbs with the touchdown. What a statement that was. What a resilient performance by the Lions. Mm. You go on the road. You're missing Aiden Hutchinson. There's a level of angst and concern. You go down 10-0. And Gibbs breaks a big run. And they score 21 unanswered. And they score four straight touchdown drives by this offense. And then when adversity hits in the fourth quarter, and they give up, I think it was 12 unanswered, they come up with a game-winning drive to set up Jake Bates, who drills the field goal. Perfect 10 for 10 to start the year. John, even the defense, which they still need someone on the edge, stepped up when they needed to. They blitzed more than they normally do. They manufactured it. They had a can-do, find-a-way attitude. And they beat the best team in the NFC, which now makes Detroit the best team in the North and the best team in the NFC. Statement win.
Oh, it's statement win. Statement for the defense. Statement for Aaron Glenn. In regards to being able to manufacture pressure on a quarterback, to be able to coach up those guys in the secondary, and it's not just him, it's the entire defensive staff, that I think it was an A-plus performance of being able to put guys in position to be successful. And coming up with a different game plan, a completely different game plan defensively than they did in the first five games. And that's players being able to perform. But going into the season, what did we say? Aaron Glenn has more toys to play with, more tools to work with, whatever analogy you want to use,
sure,
than he's had in his time at Detroit. Now you take away the number one tool in his toolbox. All those other ones are still there, save Derek Barnes. And you are able to manufacture a win on the road against an undefeated team, a division opponent, a game that you have to have. And I have all, I don't know what went on in the locker room before the game or what was being said during the week. I know I got a little excited, you might say, on Friday.
You?
But I guarantee you that challenge was out there in terms of telling that defense, hey, nobody thinks that you can get to the Super Bowl and you're going to be the weak spot.
You're going to let the team down.
You're going to let the team down because you don't have Aiden Hutchinson. The rest of you guys.
Bunch of scrubs.
Yeah. You're not difference makers. And who steps up? Brian Branch. Needed him to. Mm-hmm. Who else has stepped up throughout the course of the year other than just in that game?
Kirby Joseph, Carlton Davis.
All those guys. And I think Jack Campbell is having himself a really good season. You see the progression in 2 years with him. Josh Pascal played better. DJ Reader, I thought, had a really good game. Aleem McNeil. Like, you go down the list of guys, and they are Malcolm Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Has been forced back into a starting role, and or more at least a more prominent role.
Yes.
And he has been as good as you need him to be.
Yeah, I thought the Lions, as a defense, limited the explosives. Justin Jefferson finished the game under 100 yards, which is an accomplishment. He's a great player. And in the end of that football game, you know, part of that 12-point run was the offense fumbling and giving up a touchdown. The defense only gave up one second-half touchdown, okay? I mean, that's significant to me because they are the side of the ball that has to pick it up, and they did. They had four sacks in the second half, three of them from linebackers. They blitzed. They did what they had to do. Now, I don't love the idea that you got to blitz near 60% of the time to get it done, but on that day, they needed to, and they did what they needed to do to win the football game. If you're going to leave those edge guys on an island without blitzing, you're going to be in trouble. So what did they do? They helped them out. That's coaching. That's Aaron Glenn. It's a great point. 248-539-9797. There was so much to take out of that football game. There's Jared Goff, who's on a tear right now, playing MVP football. He's a maestro. The ball never hits the ground. And everybody on offense is doing their job. It's Tim Patrick. I want to shout out Tim Patrick. He had key blocks on the Gibbs run down the field, helping pave the way. And he had the key block on the Amon-Ra St. Brown touchdown because he motions across the formation, gets a key block on the edge. They were bringing seven. He helps. That doesn't count in the stat sheet, but those are two big-time blocks. Penei Sewell on both those touchdowns, John, you'll love this. He blocks one, and then he blocks another. He blocked two guys on the Gibbs touchdown, and he gets a chip and a reset and blocks two on the Jared Goff touchdown. Like, the offense is as advertised. They're elite. They're a juggernaut. The defense needs to come up opportunistic, and they did on the road in a big spot, trailing when things were going against them early, when things were going against them late. It's a total team resilient win, and you guys can tell us what stuck out to you. 248-539-9797. We know the pass rush is going to be part of the conversation. The level of need. What do they need to do to win the Super Bowl? It's 97.1. We'll get your ticket text in the mix. 248-539-9797. Ticket texter wants to know an update on David Montgomery's injury, John. I don't believe we have one.
Not yet today. Hopefully we'll get one, you know, before when everybody starts roaming around there in Allen Park around 8 o'clock. There'll be, I'm sure, a source that you know, says what the injury is.
But if he finished the game, I mean, I don't think we're panicked, right?
No. Now, here's the caveat, and maybe we'll hear more from TJ when he gets in at 9 o'clock. I think that'll be a good source for us, is adrenaline does matter in a game. Once that adrenaline wears off, once vitamin T wears off on the day after or the Tuesday after, things can be a little bit unpredictable. So I don't think we'll know. We probably won't really know if he's going to be available until Thursday and even Friday.
Ticket texture says, you sure up that edge, 100% Super Bowl caliber defense that complements this great offense. Question that we're getting a lot of today. Why wasn't there a 10-second runoff after the Minnesota penalty at the end of the game? Because it's a stupid rule, is my understanding, right?
Yeah.
Should have been. I mean, an offensive penalty late in the game should have a 10-second runoff. Go ahead, Greg.
The way it was explained by Dean Blandino is that the offense was set. And so if there were players moving around, it would have incurred a 10-second runoff. But because the players were set, it did not include a 10-second runoff. Think of that rule as you will, but that's the rule.
Oh, I didn't say that they broke the rule. I said it's a dumb rule.
Yeah. No, it is.
My understanding is most penalties, apparently not all penalties, but most penalties on the offense late in the game,
10-second runoff.
10-second runoff. You can't use it as a timeout because you broke the rule. That's effectively what they got, was a bonus timeout because they were flagged for a penalty.
It was illegal formation, right?
Yes.
You can intentionally do that then.
Correct.
Well, it has to be fixed.
I would anticipate in the next couple of weeks that that loophole is closed. We saw college football do it with Oregon and the 12 men on the field.
Yep.
All right. So this is a loophole that didn't cost anybody a game. So the NFL has a chance to fix something that is broken without, you know, without a team looking back going, well, it screwed us, and now it's right.
Kudos to the Lions for sending pressure so that Darnold could never drop back and throw the Hail Mary to a very tall receiver in Justin Jefferson.
It did catch me off guard because most teams don't do that. But, I mean, it worked, so you like it. But I also liked the idea, right? You don't want to let Darnold settle in, let the receivers get down, get in position, box out, and then an athlete makes a great play. Bring five. Mm-hmm. You still got six. You ID Jefferson. You got great safeties and corners. I love that they put a little extra heat on him on the final snap of the game.
Sure. They kind of did both in regards to making sure that nobody got behind him.
Yeah.
And still applying pressure. But how about Tim Patrick?
I know.
You know, over the last couple of weeks, especially in that Dallas game, he came up huge. And in this one, two targets, two catches. And you're looking at the stat line going, well, it's not huge and impactful, yet it is. Because Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be your number one target every single game. Should be. Jameson Williams going to be a target.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a big target. Sam LaPorta is going to be a target. Doesn't have to be a big target because you have Jahmyr Gibbs. You have David Montgomery coming out of the backfield. You've got Sam LaPorta. Now you have Tim Patrick. You've got, seven different guys that can be weapons for Jared Goff, who has been very good at surveying the defense and distributing the ball to the guy that is most open, but also being accurate to allow that ball to be caught by those receivers.
248-539-9797. They got down 10-0. They settled in. The offense, every bit as lethal as we think they can be. The defense needed to step up, did. And the kicker, but he's nervous about this guy, Jake Bates. We're good at kicker, John. 10 for 10, game winner.
How nervous were you when he lined up for a game winner?
I wasn't any more nervous than like the situation called for. Like, you're always a little nervous knowing like if he misses this, the whole game's over.
I was a little more nervous because it's the first time we've seen him line up for a game-winning kick. It's on the road. It's in Minnesota. And we know what's aligned, you know, what's hanging on in the balance
for the
division.
You're two games back in the division.
And I was nervous not just for that moment, but if he had missed, what's the conversation all week long?
Yeah.
Think
about how different the show is. We're talking about kicker woes. We're talking about fake punts. Talking about the pass rush is still a conversation, but the tone is much different.
Yeah.
You better go do it. And I still think they better go do something.
So I was more nervous than I normally would be for any kicker.
Yeah.
Because it's an unknown. And even if there's always going to be a nervousness if you have a great kicker that he's going to miss. That's going to be if he's 17 or 18, that's the 18th one. But for a guy that has not been in that position, yeah, I was a little more nervous.
Your phone calls, ticket text. We get right to the phones coming up next. It's 97.1.
Enjoy all the NFL action with a chance to win on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers, if you bet $5, you're going to get $300 in bonus bets if you just simply win. And take a look. There's two games tonight. Maybe it's the Parlay Hub, which I think is a lot of fun. Pick yours, or you could build your own parlay. Popular bets that are trending in the app. FanDuel Squares, just like the Super Bowl Squares, but you could do it, and you can do it in-game as well. All you have to do to have an opportunity for all of these different fun bets is visit FanDuel.com/Jansen to make every moment more this NFL season. FanDuel is an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or over and present in Michigan. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit is required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Too easy. Lions offense stepped up, big spot on the road. Overcame a 10-point deficit. Overcame a fourth quarter deficit. Won on the road, beat Minnesota. We have a ton to talk about. 248-539-9797. We're a couple hours into the show. You want to highlight Goff? You want to highlight the defense? You want to highlight their overall resilience? You want to shout out Jake Bates? Big kick and a big spot? But I do think we need to dedicate some time to pass rush. And John, they won the game. Needs to be said. It was good enough that day. Will it be good enough if they don't make a move?
It'll be good enough against most opponents. And you go down the list of the Lions' opponents.
Right, but they're...
Will it be good enough against Tennessee?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Will it be good enough against the Texans? They're having a hard time protecting C.J. Stroud against even marginal pass rush. That's a TBD. Against the Jags, the Colts. Yeah, I think those teams you're looking at, okay, it's good enough. But
the goal for the season isn't to beat the Jags and the Colts and win 10-12 games. The goal is to win a Super Bowl.
Right, so when you play the Packers, most likely when you play the Texans, when you play the Bears.
The Bills,
the Niners, the Vikings again.
Kansas City
in the playoffs. Anytime you play a playoff opponent, you're going to have better pass rush. So, yes, I do believe they have to add someone. Question is, after that game, do you believe that they have to pay the price tag for, and I'll just throw out the two names, Max Crosby or Myles Garrett, or can they go for that next level down? Some of the guys that we've been talking about, Harold Landry, you brought him up this morning. Yeah. I brought up Za'Darius Smith last week. TJ last Monday brought up Azeez Ojulari. Those are guys that you could go to. Hassan Reddick is off the market.
Fine.
Redid his deal with the Jets. I don't believe he's going to be traded. So there are some guys that you could kick the tires on. Do due diligence because, like I said, against Tennessee, I don't think you need that extra pass rush to win against Tennessee.
But I do want the acclimation process to start sooner rather than later to give that person the best chance to get a foothold. And if they barely play against Tennessee, fine. I want them ready to go against Green Bay. Exactly. Yep. So some urgency would be nice. And I know there's going to be this temptation to, hey, we won. We're good enough. We don't need to. They do need to do something. Yep. Of course, I want the best player possible. I'm not afraid of giving up first round picks, plural. I want the best player possible. I don't know that they're available, and I don't know that Brad's going to do it, but it's not an excuse to do nothing just because they won this week. They had 27 rushes out of their edges without a blitz. So a true soloed up one-on-one. They used everybody on the damn roster at the edge position. Three of the 27 rushes generated pressure. That's terrible.
It's not the pass rush rate that's going to win you
a Super Bowl.
A Super Bowl. Playoff games when it matters most.
Yeah. Let's get the phones in. 248-539-9797. Dylan in Southgate, good morning. You're on 97.1.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, so I feel like I owe an apology. I don't know if it's to Ben Johnson or the whole organization or AG, but I did not think the Lions were going to win this game. I heard a lot of people saying, like, oh, the offense is just going to put up 40 points every week. I did not think they were going to get anywhere near that against this defense, and they ended up laying 31. The defense held up a lot better than I thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you guys. Like, I don't think they need that big Max Crosby. A week ago, I was saying, screw them picks. Let's go, all in, get this guy. But I feel a lot better about where this team stands. And just that overall resiliency you guys were talking about. Like, this team is going to find ways to win games. But so for an edge rusher, though, I don't know who the player is, but I really want somebody from the AFC West or the AFC North, because I believe we're going to be playing either Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson in the Super Bowl this year. And I want somebody that's familiar with getting after one of those two guys specifically. What do you guys think about that?
It's another layer to this, but I don't think it's insignificant. I think that matters.
Yeah. Specifically for, well,
you're
first of all,
people who've rushed Mahomes and people who've rushed Lamar, and because those guys, they're different, but they're both, they're wizards. I mean, they're hard to get down.
So, I think it was Dylan was the last caller. I don't think he owes an apology.
No.
Because there are a lot of people that didn't think that they could go to Minnesota the week after Aiden Hutchinson goes down and get a win. And they did. Now, how repeatable is that? The offense, no one's concerned about. And I think the defense put a lot of people's mind at ease that the defense is greatly improved. It's a better defense than last year. And what did that get you? A trip to the NFC Championship game, but it was a loss. Now, I don't know who they end up playing in the NFC Championship game this year. I don't know who they end up playing in the Super Bowl. I don't know that if you don't, I will say this, it's going to be very difficult to win both of those games if you don't have the ability to apply pressure, whether it's bringing four or you add in a linebacker and bring five. If you have to blitz every single time, quarterbacks that are playing in that game will pick apart a defense, even though the defensive secondary is really good and it's much better. I don't know that you're able to win both of those games, maybe one of them, in regards to the NFC Championship game. But if you're playing against Patrick Mahomes and you can't apply pressure, he will dissect the defense.
He'll eat you alive. Can it be two things are true?
Because I do believe they add a receiver.
They should. Again, this is an arms race. You're trying to win a Super Bowl. I am both at ease in the sense that, like, they responded,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want them to be at ease to where they're complacent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I don't think Brad Holmes is. I mean, we have no idea. This is the first time he's been in this situation as general manager. And you could make an argument a little bit last week with whether it was Chase Young or it was Montez Sweat that they could have and should have added last year. I don't know that anybody predicted that they were going to be an NFC title contender. That seemed like they a little bit outkicked their coverage last year. This year, they're a Super Bowl contender. So now is the time that you go out and you add to this defense. When you have a loss, And Aiden Hutchinson is it's a terrible loss. You got to find a way to get better.
I hope that they have that takeaway, that they both have the right kind of guys in this locker room, that they have the right mentality, that guys step up, that they do fight, but they are going to give those guys every chance to win the fight by adding a pass rusher. 248-539-9797. We'll play some Dan Campbell locker room audio in the 8 o'clock hour. It's 97.1.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.